I'm Marty Moscowen. Welcome to Radio Times. Our economy depends on consumer spending to stay afloat, but it has serious drawbacks, most notably waste, lots of waste. There's a movement that was started almost a decade ago that's pushing back called Buy Nothing that gives communities the tools to be able to exchange goods and services for free using Facebook. Coming up, meet one of the founders, Liesl Clark. But first, hear about a local Buy Nothing chapter in Lansdowne in suburban Philadelphia. WHYY suburban reporter Kenny Cooper has this report.
It's just 1 square mile of Delaware County, but Lansdowne is home to more than 10,000 people and a thriving gift-giving economy with 1,400 members on Facebook. Buy Nothing Lansdowne is an offshoot of a growing nationwide internet campaign known as the Buy Nothing Project. The rules of participation are simple. As long as you live in Lansdowne, you may give, receive, lend, and borrow items or even acts of service for free. No strings attached. Seriously. Diane Ekternock's mother-in-law, a lifelong Lansdowne resident, recently passed away. Clearing out her home has been tough, but the Buy Nothing group has provided additional outlets where the items can go, like her neighbor, Anna Gavin, who happens to be a group administrator. Ekternock posted a give in the Facebook group, and Gavin responded with interest. Soon, they were face-to-face on a cold Thursday morning. Gavin receiving the benefit of some silk scarves and pencils, Ekternock receiving peace of mind.
I love my Buy Nothing community and wanted to see some of her items remain in Lansdowne. So that was, you know, definitely helpful for me.
Gifts and ask, as they're calling the group, can be as small as the scarves and pencils Gavin picked up to as grand as entire furniture sets and even refrigerators. They can also be practical, like a ride to the train station or even friends to bike with. While members of the group may come for the goods, Gavin says they stay for something completely different, connecting with their neighbors.
I lived here in Lansdowne for 15 years, and we knew our immediate neighbors. We didn't know them well. And then we had kids, and then we, you know, kind of saw some people who had kids, but again, we didn't really connect that much. And then I joined the Buy Nothing group.
The Buy Nothing project began in 2013. When best friends Liesl Clark and Rebecca Rockefeller noticed waves of plastics washing up onto the shores of Bainbridge Island, Washington. They diagnosed the problem as overconsumption and waste, or simply put, too much stuff. What started off as a neighborhood social experiment to limit buying and throwing away things quickly grew. Bainbridge Island would soon see several Buy Nothing groups pop up, Clark says.
It's a much more sort of sustainable way of being, but you are weaving this web of interconnectedness that becomes more and more sort of intricate, but more sort of fascinating over time because we come to know each other through our stuff.
Since then, the project has taken off in 44 countries with more than 4 million participants in 6,800 Buy Nothing groups, like the one in Lansdowne. From Upper Dublin in Doylestown to Malvern in Mount Airy, Buy Nothing is expanding in this region. Colleen Johnson of Buy Nothing Ambler Bluebell Lower Gwynedd says that part of the benefit of being an administrator is being able to see the inner workings of other groups. That's where she saw her favorite thing gifted.
Someone's relative was going into hospice, and he wanted peanut butter Girl Scout cookies, and it wasn't Girl Scout season time, and one of my members had them in the freezer, and so I took them from her, and I drove it to her. And she brought it to her relative, so it was like a little train. But we were able to fulfill someone's last request, and you know, it didn't cost anybody anything.
Acts of generosity and gift-giving may have slowed down a bit early in the pandemic, but it brought out the best of Buy Nothing Lansdowne. Take mother and daughter duo, Jillian and Caroline Lancaster. Both are self-employed graphic designers. Caroline was bored, and her mom needed her help cleaning out her Lansdowne house. So, Caroline moved in. They soon found a way to leverage the generosity of Buy Nothing to assist the Lansdowne community. With the help of their neighbors, they fashioned their porch into a makeshift food pantry where people could drop off and pick up food. Caroline says there shouldn't be any shame in needing food, especially if you're living paycheck to paycheck. Ultimately, she believes that giving should be thought of as an act of service to the community.
And it's so nice to reframe giving instead of a reciprocal thing, like I'm giving you something to show you how I care about you. It's just kind of, you're my town, you know I love you, so let's take care of each other. Why not?
Kenny Cooper, WHYY News.
And Kenny Cooper is WHYY's suburban reporter. Joining us now is Lisa Clark, whom we met in Kenny's story. She founded the, or I should say co-founded, the Buy Nothing Project with Rebecca Rockefeller back in 2013. She's co-author of the Buy Nothing, Get Everything plan, Discover the Joy of Spending Less, Sharing More, and Living Generously. And Lisa Clark, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I know you were listening in on Kenny Cooper's report about the Buy Nothing Project in Lansdowne. Does that sound like other chapters, part of your worldwide project?
It absolutely does. I mean, every local gift economy around the world is pretty much a mirror of the next one that is the next town over. We wanted to be able to scale these ideas and spread them as widely as possible.
Well, and I love the way it has evolved in Lansdowne, as Kenny was describing.
Yeah, I think, you know, as Kenny said, people come for you know, initially perhaps for the stuff or for the services that people are offering to each other, but they end up staying for the community. They stay because we come to know each other through our things, through our talents. You know, if somebody offers a concert, for example, a piano concert in your home, I mean, what a delightful way for people to be able to meet each other and actually come to know your proximal neighbors, which I think is one of the sort of social ills that's happened in our lives, where people are not quite knowing who we live next to.
Well, especially during the pandemic, when we have been essentially kind of forced apart for our own safety.
Well, that's exactly it. Ironically, during the pandemic, I think this became very obvious to all of us. We became even more isolated. And so through the Buy Nothing Project, people were able to still continue to share with each other, even if they were through items being picked up on each other's porches, at least through the platform, through Facebook, and we now have a Buy Nothing app. People could still congregate, in a sense, and communicate with each other and share their items and talk about them and learn about each other through these acts of sharing.
Well, let's go back to 2013. You and Rebecca Rockefeller looked out, what, on a beach and saw waste and trash strewn everywhere?
That's exactly it. We were both homeschooling our children, and they both, you know, we have children the same age, and we would spend days out on the beaches doing our own sort of citizen science project. And we noticed that a good amount of the what was washing up on shore wasn't just seaweed and driftwood. We were discovering that there were all kinds of plastics of every shape, color, and size. So we inventoried them, and we documented them, and we created spreadsheets, and would go out every day, and we saw that on the high tide, on the rack line, these plastics were there. They were present. We figured out exactly what they were, and they were everything. They were coming, and then we asked, where are they coming from? They're coming from our homes. They're coming from our cars. They're washing down every watershed, and we walked up watersheds, and we inventoried those plastics, which basically plastics last forever. Right. They break down over time. They slowly photodegrade, but they never go away. So this was a solution. We asked ourselves, what can we do? And perhaps we could just buy less.
Well, and this was a school project, so obviously your children were involved in this as well. I was going to say, what a great school project to be involved in.
It was idyllic in the sense that they could be very hands-on. They could discover. They could ask questions. It was sort of the perfect scientific method. And they were able to conclude that it wasn't just plastic materials that were coming from boats or from people walking on beaches. When we started to walk inland, I mean, my family, we go to the Himalayas, and we discovered that Even in a landlocked nation like Nepal, there are plastics coming down every single river and stream.
Are you surprised, speaking of the Himalayas, how worldwide this Buy Nothing Project has become?
I think we never really envisioned that it would scale so quickly and so thoroughly. But I think it's striking a chord because people are coming to know their neighbors. But especially during the holiday season, we don't have to spend as much money on perfectly usable items that Rebecca and I were discovering were being thrown away, even going to the landfill. Even items that if they're broken or they're perfectly good, they can still be shared. And so this reuse ethic, whether it's clothing, housewares, books, toys, even cars and houses have been offered.
Wow.
So I think people were really delighted by participating in this social experiment. So it spread pretty quickly.
Well, we are in the holiday gift-giving season. How are you dealing with that, Liesl Clark?
Well, it's really been joyful for us to see that now this social movement has legs and people are buying nothing in droves. And they're realizing that they can opt to first check in with their community. They can share their wish list, their so-called unshopping list with their neighbors and say, here's what I'm looking for my daughter or for my son. Just thought I'd throw it out there. Might you have a pair of basketball shoes for an 11-year-old? And lo and behold, yes, a neighbor down the street has, some lightly worn, because we know how fast our kids grow, basketball shoes. So just to say that this is, it's a joyful practice, but it also is a practical one in that we really don't have to spend as much money.
And you mentioned an app and you use Facebook. In the minute or half that we have left, what is it like to create one of these chapters?
So you can download the Buy Nothing app immediately through Apple or the Google Play. And so that's available to anybody right now. And you can start building community and see who's around you and start posting your gives and your asks and your gratitude. Those are the three actions. We also have over 6,800 groups on Facebook. So if there isn't a Buy Nothing community in your community, you can also try to create one through Facebook as well. So and also apparently there are Buy Nothing groups on Nextdoor and Reddit. And so we're pretty much open to any platform, or you can do it in real life. You can just meet up with your neighbors once a week and share.
And I'm curious about those beaches that you and your co-author and your children studied. Are they cleaner now?
There has been some awareness raising, and locals are joining us in cleaning up the beaches every day. And I think there has been some impact in that, clearly the plastics are still washing ashore every day, but I think people are now talking about it, and it's in the dialogue.
Well, Liesl Clark, thank you for joining us, and thank you for what you're doing as well.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. And she founded the Buy Nothing Project with Rebecca Rockefeller. This was back in 2013. Co-author of the Buy Nothing, Get Everything Plan, Discover the Joys of Spending Less, Sharing More, and Living Generously. We're going to take a very short break, and frankly, we're going to shift gears and talk about gift giving and receiving. And we have two guests waiting in the wings who are all about consumer behavior and how we think about giving and receiving gifts. We want to hear from you. Any questions or comments, send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
I'm Marty Moscowen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We were just talking about the Buy Nothing movement, and now we're going to switch gears to talk about why we buy gifts for other people. It's a ritual us humans have been doing since our earliest days. And while we're surrounded by rampant consumerism at this time of year, if you dig down, psychologists find that gift-giving is also about things like relationships and connection. And it seems that old adage, it's better to give than to receive, turns out to be mostly true, even if you get the perfect present. So today on Radio Times, the psychology of gift giving, why we do it, why we get it wrong sometimes, what it really means, and why it really matters. We have two guests who have joined us. Eleanor Williams joined us by Skype. She's Associate Professor of Marketing at the Olin Business School at Washington University. And Eleanor Williams, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's so fun to be here.
And nice to have you with us. And also with us is Mary Steffel. She's Associate Professor of Marketing at the DeMoor McKim School of Business at Northeastern University. And Mary Steffel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And let me just get your response to this Buy Nothing movement. And I know you both were listening in for some of the interview that I was doing with Liesl Clark and Eleanor Williams. I'll begin with you. What do you make of this movement?
I think it's a really interesting response to a lot of stuff that's been going on, obviously, recently. I think it does reflect some things that make for good gifts, that it is in some ways very thoughtful. It focuses less on the thing and more on the gift, in a way. And so I think it does in some ways capture some of the things that we'll end up talking about today about what makes for a good gift in a recipient's eyes.
Yeah. And to you, Mary Steffel, just in response to what Eleanor was saying, what's so interesting is that while it is about giving, in many ways, tangible things to people, it ends up being about human connection and relationships. Can you speak to that?
Absolutely. So gift giving isn't just about that transfer of the physical item. It's about showing somebody else how much we care about them. And it gives us a way to feel socially connected to one another.
Well, and I wonder, I mean, I think some people love this holiday season. Some people absolutely hate and dread it. To you, Eleanor Williams, which camp are you in, or do you have a foot in both camps?
That's a great question. I would say a little bit of both. I do enjoy gift giving, but I will say, given what I study, it's pretty high pressure. People have high expectations, given that I study this for a living, and so it does add a layer of stress that I think isn't true for most people.
Oh, because you're such an expert in this, they expect a really good gift. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, kind of.
I hear you. How about for you, Mary? Where do you stand?
I think it's a really fun time of year. I really do enjoy the gift giving process. That said, I don't always get it right. And by being an expert in the psychology of gift giving, and it doesn't always prevent me from making mistakes, but also makes me a little bit more aware when I do catch myself choosing something that may ultimately have not succeeded as well as I might have hoped.
Can you give us an example of that? A gift gone wrong?
Oh, totally. Well, so one year for my mother's birthday, actually, we gave her a series of Groupons to have a bunch of different really unique and special experiences around Indianapolis, where she lives. And we were really excited about this as a potential gift because it was really tailored to reflect her interest and who she was. But ultimately, I think by giving her such specific niche items, I don't think she ever got around to using most of those gift cards. I might have been better off giving her something a little bit more flexible that could have given her the freedom to get whatever it was that she truly wanted or needed at the time. So by trying to make it tailored and thoughtful and reflective of her, I think I overshot a little bit.
Did she thank you profusely or did she tell you?
She of course thanked us for the gifts, but I think in the end, as I said, I'm not sure that she actually ended up redeeming them as I had hoped.
Right. Well, you know, Eleanor, if I can go back to you, and I don't know if you have a bad gift story that you'd like to share. And I did want to talk about, you know, good gift, I mean, good if I can use that word, gift giving, but it is interesting that there are these misfires and they can run the gamut. Can you take us through some of that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was going to say, related to what you're just pointing out, I honestly don't know if I've ever given a bad gift. I mean, I'm sure I have. I am quite sure I have. But people are often so polite about it that you don't really get accurate feedback from a lot of people. So that's why Mary was basically guessing
right. That
her mother didn't use them. It's often you don't really know what happens other than you get the gratitude when they open the gift.
So a lot of poker faces around around opening presents.
A lot of appreciating the thought behind gifts, yes.
I mean, it's so interesting to talk about gift giving because I think it's something that we often do without thinking. Eleanor, help us, take us inside. What are we thinking when we are actively thinking about buying a gift for somebody? What's going through our head?
Obviously, a lot of things are going on in our heads. We're trying to think of what the person is like, what the person might need at the time. Obviously, how much we focus on each of those things varies quite a bit depending on a lot of things. We think a lot about the moment we give them the gift, actually. Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of, we'll talk about some misfires. I think that's a big part of a lot of them is that givers often give for giving as opposed to having a gift. And that distinction can often lead givers to choose things that make for great things to open, but maybe less great things to have.
Oh, and for that sort of that moment of, oh my gosh, versus what happens a couple weeks later?
Exactly. Yep.
And to you, Mary, and I'm thinking also about just, the thinking that goes into why we buy things. And since this is such a consumery time of year, and I'm also thinking of someone who I know who gives extraordinary gifts that are wrapped in just the most, thoughtful. I mean, talk about the word thoughtful. It is so thoughtful. And when I get one of those gifts, I am so deeply touched because I feel like she's saying she knows me. She knows who I am. She knows what I like. She's been listening to me. Is that part of it?
Oh, absolutely. So, if you ask givers what's most important to them when they're giving gifts, they will say they want to get something that the recipient will like. But I think that answer doesn't quite get to the heart of it. There's something more than that. There's a desire to be thoughtful, to convey how much that person means to you through the gift. So it's not just about matching their preferences. It's about showing them that you care about them. And that symbolic value of the gesture is incredibly important. And that shapes a lot of the decisions that gift givers make. There are times where people will make a trade-off between what gift they think is going to be a better signal of how much they care about someone and the gift that they know that person's going to like. Sometimes those aren't the same thing, and oftentimes people will choose the thoughtful thing over the thing that the person's going to actually like or use.
And that's the whole question about practicality, right? Whether someone's going to use it or just put it up on the shelf.
Absolutely.
Let me just make sure our listeners can join our conversation. We are, yes, talking about gift giving and receiving. It is that time of year, after all. And there's some really interesting psychology at play about how all of us consumers decide what to give, who to give to, what they want, what they don't want. And we do want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can always give us a call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Eleanor Williams is with us, Associate Professor of Marketing at the Olin Business School at Washington University. And Mary Steffel, Associate Professor of Marketing at Damore McKim School of Business at Northeastern University. Let me go back to you, Eleanor Williams, and I'm also just thinking of this very frenzied time of year. And I was talking with Liesl Clark earlier about just how I think how desperate we are to, to be with one another and maybe acknowledge one another at this time of year after almost 2 years of living through a pandemic. And I wonder how that has just sort of added to whatever anxiety people might be feeling.
Oh, I'm sure it has. it's interesting you mentioned wanting to be with other people. I know there's a lot of interesting research out there looking at people's tendency to give things as opposed to other, not things, for instance, experiences. And I feel like this would be a great year to give a shared experience to a recipient, which recipients often really appreciate. They enjoy experiences a lot. They find them very emotional. And so I think that would be a great suggestion for a lot of people is to think about less a thing you could buy and more what's an experience you could give the person that you could share with them.
And just because we've been so denied in so many way experiences, correct?
Exactly. I'm sure everybody is craving so much family time and friend time, given how apart we've had to be for so long. And I think that would make it for a great gift to find a thing to do together to share that time.
I mean, time is a great gift too, isn't it not?
Exactly.
I wonder where you stand, and Mary, I'll put this to you about And some people are, you know, they want that surprise. They don't want the person to know what it is that they got for them. And some people will say, what do you want? And then go get it for them. Help us sort of walk us through some of the thinking involved in that.
I think as gift givers, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to anticipate and know somebody's preferences without having to ask them, because that's part of what allows us to show them how much we know them and how deeply we care about them. But the psychology is actually very different on the recipient end of that. On the recipient end, I think the ability of the gift giver to intuit what your preferences are isn't quite as important as, you know, the extent to which they've put the effort into giving you something and caring about what it is you truly want. So what we find is that givers often don't ask recipients what they want, and often to their detriment. We find that people actually aren't very good oftentimes at predicting other people's preferences, and they think that the more they put themselves in the other person's shoes, the better they'll be at it. As it turns out, this strategy doesn't really help. If anything, it makes you worse. And actually, just simply asking somebody what they want can really drastically improve our accuracy at giving somebody something that they'll truly appreciate without undermining how much that's appreciated by the recipient. But we don't necessarily realize how much more accurate that makes us, and we often don't realize that that's not going to somehow take away from the value of the gift if it's not a surprise. Recipients often really appreciate when you get them what it is that they truly wanted.
Well, let me follow up on that. You're saying that we think we know what people want, but when it turns out we're not so good at it?
Oh, no, not at all.
Not at all?
So,
okay.
Not at all. It's actually... I was a part of a research project where we ran 25 different studies giving friends, romantic partners, even strangers the opportunity to try to predict the preferences or opinions or thoughts of another person. And what we found is that people were dramatically overconfident in their ability to do this. And the things that they thought would help them do a better job of doing it were actually the wrong strategies. People thought that again, putting themselves in that person's shoes and trying to simulate what that person would want would somehow help them be more accurate, when in fact, what it actually did is it led people to kind of put aside any commonalities they might have had with the other person that could have otherwise helped them make a better prediction, so they were less accurate, and they didn't realize that just asking the other person could have gone miles toward helping them do a better job of anticipating that person's preferences and really getting in sync with them.
Well, you're listening to Radio Times right here on WHYY in Philadelphia. Eleanor, let me get you to pick up on that. I mean, it's so interesting, especially with people like family members or close friends. You know, we think we know them. We spend a lot of time with them. We listen to them, hopefully. And yet, as Mary was saying, we're not so great at figuring out what it is that they actually want.
Yeah, I think a lot of it, you know, Mary mentioned, obviously, we do a lot of extra work than we need to when it comes to figuring these things out. And I think part of it too is that gift giving especially has all these rules to it that we end up trying to follow. So there is that rule that you're supposed to, you know, come up with a gift idea for yourself as opposed to just asking. There's also other things that people kind of expect, that like maybe it should be something that the person wouldn't buy for themselves, or it's that person wouldn't even know they wanted. And so there's all these extra pressures that go into it beyond just simply a difficult time getting to somebody else's heads. We also layer on top of it all of these rules about what makes for supposedly a good gift that often don't end up being what the recipient really enjoys in the end anyway.
So we're overthinking it, really.
Exactly. We put all this pressure on ourselves to come up with like the perfect gift, the ideal gift, and it probably doesn't exist, and you definitely won't find it without asking the person what their ideal gift is.
Fair enough. Let me get a caller to join us on Radio Times, and go ahead. You are on the air. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hello, Marty. I hope you guys are well. Thank you so much for this program.
Sure.
You guys are the greatest here. I have three horrible stories.
Okay, go ahead.
Young lady was just talking about short of asking someone their perfect gift, I'd rather be asked today. First thing, my goddaughter gave me a gift, and it was a night light. And she, the sentiment was beautiful. She gave it to me with a notice that says, "Godfather, you light up my life." Oh. The sad part about it is I'm blind.
Oh,
why
goodness.
Would you give a blind person a night light? And no harm. I don't mean to offend anything. But it was just so strangely funny. Like, and then my in-laws, my mother and my father-in-law, took my children out to Christmas shop for me. They brought me back some shampoo and a comb and brush set. I'm bald-headed. What am I going to do with a comb and brush set? And then my mother-in-law's friends, when my wife and I got married, they gave us these two gifts, big boxes, beautifully wrapped. I'm told they were describing this wrapping to me. On the inside of the box, they gave one to my wife, one to me for us to open up. My wife opened up a lamp. I opened up a lampshade.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, Marty. God bless you guys. Thank you so very
well,
much.
Thank you for sharing.
I'm out of here.
All righty. You're out of here. And I appreciate the call to Radio Times. I mean, Eleanor Williams, talk about gifts gone wrong, right?
A little bit. Oh, my goodness.
But I love his sense of humor, right? I mean, we have to keep that, right?
Exactly. I think that's one lesson that givers can take to take some pressure off, is that at the end of the day, most recipients, they really just appreciate getting a gift and having you have thought of them. And so what the thing actually is, you know, obviously a better gift is better, but having somebody think about you, maybe spend a little money on you, or at least put some time and effort into it, people do see that and they do appreciate it.
Well, I like the sentiment from his, I think it was his granddaughter, "You light up my life." You know, to you, Mary. I mean, obviously you can't use a lamp, but nonetheless, you know, the sentiment is there.
Absolutely. So, you know, there's the age-old adage that it's the thought that counts. And actually, research has sort of debunked that to some degree, that as long as people like the gift, it doesn't really matter how much thought they think the giver put into it. But it's those moments where the gift really bombs, where it's really not the appropriate gift for someone, where the thoughts do matter. You know, in the case of this nightlight, you know, that beautiful message and the wonderful thought behind it, I think, you know, as you could hear in the tone of that caller's voice, like it meant something to him,
yes.
Even if the gift itself wasn't something that he was going to use or get that much actual tangible value out of.
Well, let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. We are talking about gift giving and receiving. It is that time of year. Our guests are Mary Steffel and Eleanor Williams. We got a lot more to discuss after this very short break, and do stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We're talking about why we give gifts, how we give gifts, and why and how we receive them. And our guests are Eleanor Williams, Associate Professor of Marketing at the Olin Business School at Washington University. Mary Steffel is an Associate Professor of Marketing at the Damore McKim School of Business at Northeastern University. And as always on Radio Times, we want to hear from you. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Let me read a couple of comments from our listeners. A tweet from Helen. She says, "I grew up in an impoverished family, and the gift giving and wild consumption at Christmas, which I could not experience as a child, left me with complex and contradictory feelings as an adult, despite being financially secure. I dislike it intensely." I wonder, Eleanor Williams, if you could speak to that, because I did want to talk about the fact that we live in this country of such disparate, riches and poverty. And I think for a lot of people, this is a very difficult time of year. For Helen, she's got these childhood memories, and they have stayed with her as an adult.
Yeah, gift giving is often very stressful for the psychological reasons that we've talked about, for financial reasons, obviously, that the whole season, all of the advertising culture around it has led to super high expectations about what Christmas should look like and what it should be. And it's completely understandable that she would find it stressful, especially given her past experience. I actually have a little bit of unpublished data looking at that stress and also the reaction to it, and I find that so many people end up opting out of gift giving in certain relationships because that they don't want that pressure anymore. That a majority of people, in fact, have at least one relationship where they've actively chosen to stop exchanging gifts because it was one way to relieve some pressure in the relationship.
Well, that's interesting. And Mary Steffel, if you want to respond to that, and I was thinking, certainly in my own life, there are people I don't give gifts to anymore. I mean, you know, we don't need or want anything. And there doesn't seem to be a reason to exchange gifts. But that's not true for everybody. Is there a demarcation, you think, where there are just some relationships that are in the gift category and others that are in the not gift category?
Well, there's some new research that suggests that picky recipients who have very specific preferences and might be likely to reject a gift that you give them or not receive it with excitement or gratitude are often really stressful for us to shop for. And that stress of shopping for someone who we think may not necessarily like or appreciate or express gratitude at whatever we give them can lead us to sort of shut down and you know, put less effort into the gift giving, feel more anxious about the process, and ultimately kind of seek ways out of that. Now, I think that's compounded when people feel the pressure to give material items to each other, because these things are so easy to compare. You know, it's easy to compare whether, you know, this version of the iPhone or this bicycle is as nice as this other material item. One potential way to get around this is through experiential gifts, which is something we talked about earlier. Giving experiences to other people is one way to give something that might be valued and appreciated, but it's harder to compare experiences one-to-one with other things. And so to some extent, it allows us to kind of avoid that comparative pressure that you might otherwise have.
And to you, Eleanor Williams, picking up on what Mary Steffel was just saying, I mean, it is so easy to be preferential these days. I mean, you look at products and you can get it in multiple colors and multiple, you know, specific designs designed just for, you know, for you or for you or for me.
Yeah, customization has become so common that it is a thing that people sometimes come to expect. There is research suggesting that givers, in fact, pay a premium to customize things, that ends up being part of the value they see in a gift, is that they can not only pick the right thing, but they can make it exactly right for the person, which I think in theory sounds really great, and in practice might just compound some of the things that we've talked about already about not quite getting a person's preferences. But it is a thing that givers definitely value and think is important in their gifts.
Here's a comment from Joanne. I find myself buying gifts that are my taste, not necessarily the recipient's taste. I also had a family member who insisted on giving me ornaments every year because he loved decorating and felt I should too. I'm sure Joanne is not alone. Can I toss that back to you, Eleanor?
Oh, yeah, I think that definitely happens. I think there's some research that's a little mixed about people's appreciation of gifts that reflect the other person's preferences, that I think in some ways it can be a nice way to bond and to get to know them better and have a reminder of what they're like around the house. But it does also mean that sometimes it could be a real miss, where it definitely is sort of like the Simpsons episode where Homer gives Marge the Homer inscribed bowling ball. It can be kind of like that sometimes, for sure.
Funny you should say that. I posted that clip on our Facebook page in preparation for or promoting today's show, the Homer bowling ball fail over. It was actually a birthday party, but nonetheless, absolutely. Here's an email from Erica. As I've grown up, I've come to prefer spontaneous gift giving over holiday gift giving. I find it more valuable for both the giver and the receiver when a gift is unexpected or just because, or I saw this and I knew that you would love it. When gift giving becomes obligatory, such as the holiday shopping season, it becomes a chore. Interesting. Mary, you want to respond to Erica's comment?
Oh, absolutely. So I think that's a very real consequence of having these rituals and obligations and expectations around gift giving, in that it sort of adds these additional pressures and emotions and considerations that might not necessarily be present when it's a more spontaneous gesture.
What do you think about Secret Santas? A lot of workplaces are having them these days. Mary?
So Secret Santas are interesting in that it allows you to give gifts to other people, but without necessarily revealing who you are as the gift giver. So you would think that this would free you up from being as concerned about, you know, necessarily demonstrating to the other person how well you know them, because they don't know who the gift is from. This is true to some degree, and it can be a very fun way to take away some of that pressure. But in some of our own research, we find that people carry through those same ideas and pressures even when the other person's not going to know who gave them the gift. So we find that, you know, when people are trying to pick something that's thoughtful, and they end up prioritizing the thing that they think is thoughtful over the thing that the other person's going to like the most, we find that people will kind of make that mistake or make that choice or trade-off even in situations where the recipient's never going to know who gave them the gift.
Eleanor, do you have a position on Secret Santas?
I think I definitely know a lot of people who find it to be just one more extra thing that makes work stressful. Sometimes they're pretty common at workplaces. And also just makes life a little more stressful, for sure. There's something about that particular setup that can kind of ramp those things up. I was going to say regarding obligatory versus spontaneous gifts, that so Mary and I have actually been friends for a very long time, and she's wonderful, and she's given me many lovely gifts. But one thing she excels at is the timing of the gifts. That she just somehow knows sometimes when I need a little something to perk me up, and she's been so great about giving those kinds of gifts. And I think a great message to give is that recipients really appreciate that. It means a lot to them. And you might think about how to sort of de-emphasize some of the obligatory gift giving. You know, obviously do it if you feel like you really have to, but maybe prioritize thinking about what are times you can give a spontaneous gift, because it really does give a lot of lift to the person who gets it.
Oh, that's lovely. Eleanor, what's something that Mary has given you that lifted your spirits?
Sometimes it doesn't even matter what it is. It's more just the gesture. I remember I was having some career struggles at one point, and she just gave me some really indulgent things, like a sparkly scarf and some makeup, where it just was a fun little gesture, something to treat myself, something that I would have probably hesitated to buy to splurge on myself. It was just a lovely thing for her to do, and it's really stuck with me for years.
Well, that's lovely. That's Eleanor Williams talking about our other guest, Mary Stiffel. And we are talking about gift giving, and we do want to hear from you. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us. That phone number is 1-888-477-9499. So, Mary, since Eleanor raised this, is this something you do with other people as well? Spontaneous gift giving?
I try. My mother is actually the master of this. She's really great at being in tune with the people around her and their different needs and things that they're going through, and finding ways of finding gestures or tokens to kind of show her support and love of the people in her life when she senses that they could use that cheerleader on their team, or they could use that shoulder to cry on when they're going through a tough time.
I mean, it's about paying attention, right? It's about listening.
Absolutely.
And is that how you got interested in consumer behavior and gift giving, Mary?
Absolutely. So what got me interested in gift giving and consumer behavior was that so much of my education on decision making was about what happens inside your head when you're making a decision. It's all about those personal decisions. And I felt like that was really leaving something important out. So many decisions happen in a social context. So many decisions happen between or with other people. And, you know, mean something more than, you know, the quality or the price of the outcome. It's about symbolizing, you know, something about your relationship with another person, telling that person that you care about them, that you know them. And to me, understanding those dynamics and how we can do a better job of responding to and supporting one another was really what I found exciting about this area of research.
How about for you, Eleanor?
I think that captures a lot of my thinking about how, like, the complexity of the decisions we make in our daily lives are so interesting. And marketing involves so many of that. Consumer behavior, we do so much in that world that so much of life is about consumption in some form or another that I found that really interesting. For gift giving in particular, I got interested mainly because I had received a number of gifts that I was a little puzzled by.
Okay.
Certainly appreciated, but definitely wondered what the thinking was. And so I decided to try to figure it out and figure out where my givers were coming from and why I reacted the way I did. And it's led to some really interesting insights for sure.
And what was one of the presents you were puzzled by?
I always I hate throwing my parents under the bus like this, but it was definitely a gift for my parents. I one year requested just a very kind of boring gift, an electric tea kettle, that a thing that just makes water hot. It is not an interesting gift. I think people often hesitate to give really practical gifts like that, even when the person asks for them, because they seem kind of boring. And so my parents were like, okay, that sounds nice. Here instead is a Himalayan salt plank. for you to serve canapé on, or, you know, grill, or, you know, all kinds of things. And it was a lovely gesture. And I knew as soon as I opened it that it would go in a drawer and I would move it around the country. And at some point it would break and I have to get rid of it. And so my dad, I think, heard some hesitation or worried about it. And so he was like, you can return it if you would like. And so I did. And I got that tea kettle, which I still have on my counter in my kitchen today. And so that whole ordeal, we'll call it, was definitely one of the instigators of my research and gift giving, is to look at why all that happened and why people reacted the way they did.
That's a great story. And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We have just a couple of more minutes before I have to say goodbye. Mary, I'll toss this to you. And I wonder whether there's also a part of gift giving that can be not competitive, but, you know, if someone gives, let's say, you or me a gift, but I didn't get them a gift, whether it sort of creates this pressure to respond in kind, even if you didn't think of it spontaneously.
So there's a lot of pressure in gift giving to reciprocate and to reciprocate in kind. So one of the things that stresses people out about gift giving is, you know, whether their gifts are going to be well calibrated to the expectations of the other person, or whether they're going to match the level of, you know, money or time or effort or sentiment that the other person put into the gifts. And so I do think that can make it a challenge. One thing that I've seen in research, though, is that merely the expression of gratitude and that sincere expression that this gift meant a lot to you and that you appreciate it can actually go a long way to restoring that balance, even in the absence of a gift that restores that balance itself. So that expression of gratitude can really make the giver feel much better, can make that giver feel close to you, even if the item that you gave them maybe doesn't measure up in some way.
I didn't save enough time in the end for donations, but I'll toss it back to you, Eleanor Williams. I know a lot of people that, you know, instead of gifts, you make a donation to some organization that someone cares about.
Yeah, I think that that can be a lovely gift. A small caveat might be that it works better if you're really close to the person, so you have more of those chances to express gratitude and reaffirm the relationship. It's maybe less good if you don't know the person especially well, if you're a little more distant to them, because that relationship building hasn't happened yet, and so it seems more like you just didn't give them a gift as opposed to you made a nice donation in their name. But for somebody you're close to, can be a lovely gesture.
Let me just read a comment from Joanna. I felt that holidays have become too materialistic. And in my immediate family, we do not exchange Christmas presents, but we make each other's birthdays very special indeed. We have to leave it there. Eleanor Williams, Mary Steffel, thank you for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
You're very welcome. Mary Steffel, Associate Professor of Marketing at Northeastern University, and Eleanor Williams, Associate Professor of Marketing at Washington University. Go to WHYY.org and look for Radio Times under Programs, or you can download a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcasts. You can find us on Facebook, and you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at WHYY Radio Times. Adam Staniszewski, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, show produced by Debbie Bilder and Paige Murray Bessler.